You're listening to the Just One Outdoors Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Just One Outdoors Podcast. And like always, we start with that amazing, hey guys, and then it dies out. But this week, I feel like it's kind of recently our podcasts are like, we finally have some guests on, like with Bobby. And now we have Brian Hood on. You guys have heard us talk about him, and we finally have him on the podcast. This episode is going to be a good one. Brian, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, everybody. I'm Brian. I've known Austin now for just a little over a year. Met him at church. Really great guy. Met Austin through, or Cam through Austin. Really enjoy sharing time with him in the outdoors, hunting, fishing. Born and raised here in Missouri. Started fishing ever since I was old enough or big enough to hold a Snoopy pole in my hand. And, you know, catching crappie up at Truman Lake. And moved into deer hunting probably around the age of 13, shot my first doe. So been doing it a while.
Good.
I was just going to hop in here and share my first experience with Brian, around Brian. I'd heard stories about Brian from Austin because they'd met at church, like Brian said, and started hanging out, doing stuff, going hunting. And Austin calls me. He's like, hey, I know this guy, and he's taken me to this awesome spot. It's guaranteed deer for sure. And I'm like, okay, I've heard this before. So we're on the way down to hunt this spot that is Brian's spot. And it was early in the morning. And we have this freak thing happen with a deer. Austin almost hit it, kind of hit it, whatever. We pull off to the side of the road. And then Brian shows up. And I don't even know what time it was, but it was kind of misty. It was early in the morning. And I meet Brian. And then we go down and got to do something on the lake hunting that I'd always wanted to do. I'd seen videos of people getting in boats, riding around the lake, hopping out, hunting. And we did that, shot a deer, and it was just like this perfect thing. So I've got like high expectations for Brian this year because he fulfilled so many of my dreams last year, but got to go to this spot and we're, you know, on the middle of the lake. It's pitch dark. It's kind of raining, freezing cold. And we just pull up on this bank and Austin and I hop out and Brian, he goes off the other direction and somehow we ended up killing deer that day. And it was awesome.
Yeah, that was a great spot until I told Austin about it.
There are still deer in this spot. But I will hop in and say that we probably do owe him a trip to our secret private public land spot. Kind of because he revealed his secret private public land spot. So we probably owe him, well, let's see, how many deer did we kill there? We killed three. There may not be deer down there. They may have moved. But no, every time I've been to this particular area, I've seen deer. Brian has told me stories, countless stories of seeing deer. And really, it's a great place.
Yeah, they're definitely overpopulated in that area and need the control of hunting in there. I mean, no one else is in there. There's no natural predators in there. There's not even a major road for, you know, deer vehicle accidents to help control that number. So it's either disease or hunting.
Yeah.
Those are going to be the two options for the deer.
And there's not enough food down there for the herd that's down there. You know, I was hunting, I think it was by myself, kind of in the general area, and came to this clear cut and had 19 does come out. And I was just like, I should shoot, but I was already on like four deer already. And I was like, I don't really want to drag this deer out and stuff. But it was just like, there are way too many deer here. Like, and you know, you stop in some of the places there and talk to people and they're like, they're everywhere. Like everywhere.
Yeah. That is one of my biggest fears with that area. Whenever I first started hunting it is the public land backs up to a very densely populated area with lots of homes around there. And it was always one of those things I was almost scared to be seen down there because you didn't know what Karen was going to come out of her backyard and start yelling at you, calling the cops, even though everything you're doing down there is completely legal. As long as you're doing it in a safe manner, you know, we only archery hunted that area because it was that way. And as long as we're shooting away from homes and stuff like that and know where our lines are at, there's nothing wrong with it. But you still have that fear of someone. But it was always reassuring when you did meet someone down there and they would come out and be like, yeah, you need to, because I can't even grow rhododendrons because they eat them as soon as they pop up. You
know? Yeah.
So,
Yeah, and go ahead, Cam.
Oh, I was just going to give a shout out too. Austin mentioned us kind of stealing your spot and having to share our spot with you, which we're going to do, and we want to hunt with you more this year. I'm honestly disappointed that I met you so late in season last year and we only got to hunt together like that one time. But the coolest thing, I think, for me, not only, you know, getting to go to your spot, and you put in a lot of work at that spot, at least, you know, doing the research and the scouting and stuff, but it opened up a completely new way to hunt for me and for Austin. Like, we had never really thought about hunting like that, that style. You talked about being behind homes, and it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. It was completely different. You know, you look to the right and there are boats going by and people bass fishing. You look to the left and there's a porch and people are drinking their coffee. It's crazy. But like you said, we were doing it safely and legally, so everything is all cool with that.
Yeah, that's one of my newfound favorite ways to hunt is I call it ground and pound or boat and pound. Getting on these core lakes, we have so many of Missouri, you know, Truman, Stockton, Pawnee, Bull Shoals are all Corps of Engineers lakes, and those have private or public access around them. It's limited access. Usually you have to go in by boat. But to get on one of those points where nobody else has been in for 40, 50 years and hunt, you can have a really successful hunt out there.
Yeah. And, you know, those deer down there are so used to seeing people too. It's kind of weird. Like, you'll just kind of, one of my hunts, I kind of just walked up on a deer and it didn't spook. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to shoot you. And, you know, it was just crazy experiences down there, but definitely looking forward to this year. I will say I didn't kill your bucks. So my dad tried.
Yeah.
Failed.
Oh, I was, so that was sad to see. Yeah. I was for sure he had that one.
That was just a crazy story. Literally, we pull up onto the rocks. We just landed somewhere. Like, it was like, yeah, deer might be here, but we just landed to kind of walk this area, the ground and pound, and literally deer pop up right when the boat touches the rocks. And my dad got up and was getting ready to shoot. I'm like, Dad, you gotta get out of the boat first to make it has to be legal. So he's literally able to step out of the boat, take aim, and he hit a twig just right before this nice, I think it was an 8-point.
8 or 9, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I know multiple, you know, through Cam and stuff, multiple people that have hunted these areas that just aren't pressured. And it's not one particular area. It's, you know, like you said, all these core lands around the lakes that are kind of just crazy that are overlooked, I would say.
Yeah, well, they're not only overlooked, but just they're hard to access.
Yeah.
You know, you have a lot of core land, but a lot of the access to those are either public beaches or spots that do get a lot of pressure because you can access that property quickly and easily there, or you have to get permission off of a private individual to come in through their backside of their yard or their field to get to those areas. And a lot of those people, that's kind of their little sanctuary back there. That's where they hunt at. So it's sometimes hard to get access. Mm-hmm. And I'm not one for door knocking. You know, I'd rather go hunt public and never knock a door if I didn't have to. So I'd rather just skip around them, go by the lake, beach the boat, and get in and hunt their own little sanctuary that they have hidden back there.
Yeah, I was going to bring up a story that, you know, Austin shared how the deer are used to people, and he had that one situation where he walked up on one. But we also had another situation the day that I shot my doe. We finally recover it, whole long deal, long story, ended up finding it. But then we go to another spot, and we drive up, and a buck and a doe stood up, and they're just looking at us. And unfortunately, the buck was just a half rack, so we weren't really interested in shooting him. But
and I couldn't legally.
Yeah, he couldn't legally. I was still holding off. You know, a week later, I ended up shooting one with a half rack anyway. But Austin ended up parking the Jeep, and we're probably 20 or 30 yards away from him. And we literally, he gets out, goes to behind the Jeep, opens up the trunk, gets his bow all together. I'm in the Jeep videotaping the whole thing. They're just sitting there looking at us, looking at him. He draws back, shoots the doe. We find it, I don't know, 30 yards later. And really, they just were just checking us out. I mean, they weren't scared at all, just curious, really.
So we mentioned all this. We also have to mention the sad part about that day where we brought Cam and broke Brian's boat.
Oh, that wasn't anything to do with Cam being in the boat. I guarantee
But much now you have it fixed.
Yes.
And you're going bow fishing a lot.
It's all set up with bow fishing rig right now.
How is that going? You know, you and I have went out a couple times, but you've went out quite a few times. So how's that going?
It's been a slower year for me, honestly. The past 4 or 5 years, the local lakes have had lots of rain and lots of flooding. That always seems to do better because the water gets up into the fields. Makes shooting a lot easier. Finding them, they're going to be up in the grass, munching on grass and grubs. So finding them's easier and shooting them's easier whenever they're in a foot of water. Whenever we're hitting the lakes and they're 5, 6 foot down, you're seeing just a flash of them go by. It's a little bit harder.
Yeah.
So
when did you get into bow fishing?
I actually got my first bow fishing rig in high school, which would have been late 90s. Went to a garage sale. They had a bow there, and I always wanted to shoot a bow. And I bought it, and it had an old Zipco 808 on it and a fiberglass arrow, and I didn't have any clue what it was for. Until I started asking around, and some friends of mine said, oh, that's for bow fishing. You need to try it. Well, we lived on Lake of the Ozarks at that time. We were 100 yards, not even 100 yards, 100 feet probably from the lake. And we had a nice big muddy cove out there that we seen carp in all the time. So that was my initial bow fishing adventures, was just walking the knee-deep mud, waist-deep water, just shooting carp out of the little cove behind the house.
Do you eat the fish that you shoot? Does it kind of depend on what it is?
I have eaten them. No, that's not something that is regularly practiced by anybody, really. The carp and stuff like that always go into a pile or scrap pile for compost. I have a few friends that ask me every once in a while for some, and they'll actually feed them to their chickens and stuff like that for their protein source. But otherwise, they just go into a compost pile, and that's great for gardening. You know, nothing I wouldn't say really goes to waste, but it's not a delicacy to eat.
Sure.
If I had to choose one, and you said I had to choose one of the fish that I shot, I would choose gar every time. The backstrap on gar is second to probably crappie and walleye on my list. You know, it's right up there. You cut the little backstraps up into like 1-inch nuggets, deep fry it just like you would crappie, and chow down. You couldn't tell the difference.
Really? I would never think to eat a gar. Like, never. That would never even cross my mind.
Yeah, I know some people even take, like, the carp, and they'll pressure cook it and make fish patties out of it. Buffalo is known for the buffalo ribs, smoking buffalo ribs. So there's a lot of recipes out there for invasive, you know, what they would call trash fish that we are bow fishing. They're non-game fish. But, yeah, I personally, for the most part, just use them for compost.
So what are you looking for when you're going to find a spot? Like, now you've got spots that you've had a history at, you've tried places out, but now as someone who's got some experience, you know, what would you be looking for when you're a new person trying to get into bow fishing?
Ooh, that's a tough one. As a new person getting into bow fishing, I would say look everywhere. Fish are in different locations, different time of the year. Right now we're in the spring, so they're going to be up in the shallows. We've probably just about completed out our spawning cycle for them. So they're not going to be up rolling and stuff, but they're still going to be up in that fresh vegetation and munching down before the water gets too hot. Once it gets hot in the summer, they're going to move deeper. So you're going to look for main lake points with big chunk rock on it, stuff like that. So it just varies. It's kind of like deer during deer season. You know, you got your early season pattern, and then you have your pre-rut and your rut and your post-rut patterns. And then you have your late winter when they're just searching for food. So it's very similar to deer hunting as far as, you know, having to learn the patterns of the fish.
Yeah, we talked to Bobby a couple weeks ago, who we kind of told you guys was one of our mentors. Well, Brian, for me, is another one who's really pushed me to try some different things, you know, try a new method of deer hunting, try bow fishing, and get into some things. So Brian is kind of one of those people that's had his foot or kind of tried everything, whether that's dove hunting, turkey hunting, all of that. So I'm curious, my question to you is, if you had to choose one for the rest of your life to do, what would it be?
Oh gosh.
Put you on the spot.
Deer hunting. I mean, archery deer hunting. Yeah, probably would be it. The the archery season being so long in Missouri and even in other states starting, you know, as early as August and in some states running as late as February, I believe. It gives you such a wide range of places and times to hunt. And you can eat them. They taste great. So why would you not choose it? You know, you have the most time and the best meal.
Do you have a story about deer hunting with a bow that just kind of sticks out? Like for me this year, this was my first year, you know, shooting something with my bow, and the two deer that I shot are definitely going to live, you know, in my memory for a long time, but you've been doing it for years and years and years now. Is there still, you know, a story that just sticks out that kind of is drawn to your memory when you think about bow hunting?
Yeah, I've had a bow for a while. Don't make me mislead you. I haven't archery hunted that long. It's probably only been about 10 years, honestly. But I guess that's quite a while in some aspects, but not as long as I've been rifle hunting. One of my first hunts with archery hunting, I actually got drawn for a local managed hunt. And during this managed
hunt... Wait, this was one of your first hunts?
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
I think it was actually the second deer I harvested was during that managed hunt.
No way.
So it was an earn a buck managed hunt. So you had to shoot a doe before you were allowed to shoot a buck. It's a heavily populated area with deer, and they want to control the numbers through doe management. So they want to make sure that you're taking a doe and not just going out and taking trophy bucks. During our pre-hunt meeting, they told us that there's these nice deer out there, nice bucks, and they had their game camera footage to show it and their night surveillance. You know, they took pictures at night in different areas to show you how dense the deer population is, to kind of give everybody an idea of how and where to set up. My first night out hunting, and I actually had a small 8-point buck that walked by that was injured, looked like it'd probably gotten hit by a car on the near road. I called the agent while the deer was in front of me and asked permission to harvest that deer, and I would use my buck tag on it. He declined it. He said, sorry, we can't, you know, we change the rules here. We have to change the rules everywhere. He said, nature will take its course and shoot a doe, and then you're more than welcome to harvest that buck. And that was my intentions. Second morning, I went out, had a group of deer come off or go into the bedding area that I was set up on, and shot my second doe. My first one was a, we won't talk about that as a little one. my second doe with archery equipment, and was on that hunt. And no sooner than I shot her, a group of bucks came in, and I had a 14-pointer come in 30 yards from me. Perfect. Same spot the doe did, but I had buck fever so bad. I was shaking my stand. I was in a climber stand, and it was rattling on the tree. The chains were rattling. I couldn't get settled on my pin, and I just released and shot like 2 foot in front of it, and I didn't even knock an arrow because I couldn't even grab it out of the quiver because I was shaking so bad.
Yeah.
I've heard that story countless times. I didn't know it was that early in your hunting career, that or your deer hunting. That's insane to me that you had a 14-point buck. Like, even just thinking about that, that gives me buck fever. I got buck fever for my 6-point this year. I don't really have a lot of room to talk.
Yeah, I've learned from that incident not to count points until you release the arrow and have the deer laying on the ground, because it gets in your mind, you know, because that's what I was focused on the whole time. You know, I wasn't worried about, you know, where I was placing my shot or anything like that. I was looking at rack the whole time. And so it was a great learning lesson. I'm kind of glad I didn't shoot it, because that would have really spoiled archery hunting for me. You know, I would have expected something like that out every time. And if I didn't, I would have felt like I failed at that point.
So. Yeah, which it's rare to see a deer that big.
Yeah, in Southwest Missouri, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to decide if, you know, if it was a good thing. You know, on the one hand, I think it's good that you were able to draw that, because you got a lot of exposure really quickly. You got, you know, an opportunity at a couple of deer. You got to experience buck fever, and that's something that I think most people are going to experience no matter what. The, you know, disappointing thing is, you know, now 10 years later, you have that same experience. You've probably got enough experience under your belt that you could make that, you know, make that shot. But, you know, you got to learn one way or the other. And I actually have a buddy at work who I think drew the same managed hunt that you're talking about. Because Austin and I, we've talked about it before. And that's the hunt that Austin and I just every year we're texting about, man, I hope that we draw this. I hope we can get in it. And I know it's probably gotten way harder in the past 10 years to draw it, but you know, we're going to be around a while, hopefully, and we're just going to be keep racking up the points.
Even if we move out of state or somewhere else, we'll still find a way to put in for this hunt.
I mean, right now I've put in for that hunt ever since then, and I'm up to my 10 or 11 preference points for that same hunt. So I might root you guys out if I get drawn. Sorry.
I mean, that's
fine. We could put in as a group, and you know, then if one gets drawn, all gets drawn. That's one nice thing about Missouri.
Yeah.
How many can you have in a group when you do that?
I believe up to 6.
We need to fill that 6 with high points.
Yeah.
We need to recruit people.
Yeah, well, that's one thing with my daughter. She's started archery hunting now, but she's been hunting with me. She's been going hunting with me since she was 2 years old and sitting in a stand with me. And since she has started archery hunting, I've been putting in for her every year, both for managed deer tags, the bear, the elk, and turkey. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, we're building up her points at this point.
Yeah.
And if we get drawn, if she gets drawn and I don't, I'd be happy to go along and, you know, coach her, assist her.
Yeah.
By all means. I mean, of course.
This is something we haven't really got into on our podcast because we don't really have kids, but what is it like, or how do you get your kids involved in the outdoors? I know like Monday you took them bow fishing, but how has that been like as they grew up? How did you introduce the outdoors to them and get them involved?
As far as they've known, it's always been a way of life. Both of my kids have known that, you know, mid-November is deer season. That was one of my weeks of vacation mm-hmm. whenever I was had a full-time job was that was my week. You know, work knew I wasn't going to be there. My wife, Hannah, she's been on the podcast. She knew we weren't going to be at home. We were all going to go to deer camp. My dad ran a butcher shop. So, you know, it was nice once I met and married my wife. I kind of trained her to take my position in the butcher shop, which allowed me more time to hunt. So, it's always been something that they've known. It's not strange to them.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I think that's really cool. And I think there's something about getting kids in the outdoors early that, you know, whether they stick with it or not or fall in love with it, like some of us crazy people do, you know, at least they experience it. And it's an experience that most people don't get, especially when they're not raised with the outdoors as part of their life. And even some of these experiences that I'm having, like bow fishing and things like that, I'm just now experiencing, you know, and I've grown up with hunting and different things, but it's been kind of strictly rifle hunting. So it's kind of cool meeting people who have different experiences or do different things and learning from them and going, you know, that's something I want to get more involved in. And, you know, eventually get my kids involved in.
Yeah. And every kid's different. I don't force my kids to go out and do it. If they don't want to, that's fine. My daughter will go out and sit all day and wait for a monster buck. My son will go out and the first legal thing that walks by, he's pulling the trigger and he's going to go in and he's going to eat a sandwich. You know, he's done for the day.
That's fair. Speaking of a first legal thing, you have a story about a deer that had some white spots on it, I'm pretty sure. I think you should share that on this this podcast.
Yeah, that was that first one that I didn't want to talk about. No. No, it was my first archery deer. I take pride in it. It was actually also my first recorded deer kill. I was just sitting up. Had a neighbor's farm that we were hunting, and he had a filled edge, and I asked permission. He let me put a tree stand there on the property line between ours and his and where I could hunt his field, and was sitting out there and had a young fawn with spots still going down its back walk right underneath my stand, and that was the first thing I've seen with the bow in my hand. And I just decided, well, the Lord blessed me and I'm not going to take it for granted, and took my shot. And
to be fair, it didn't have like spots like a fawn, like it was young and you could see the spots still, but they were fading pretty quick.
Yeah. It was so early season. It was a 6-month-old. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like brand new born, but yeah, it was the youngest they could have legally been, I think.
Speaking of fawns, one thing that I haven't got the chance to tell you about, so we'll just do it here. yesterday on our float, we were floating down the James, and the group in front of us was like, oh, there's a baby deer, and they were talking about this mama and stuff. Well, Cam and I get up there, and there's a steep embankment that this fawn is trying to get up and can't get up it. And it's going back and forth, can't get up. We sit and watch it for a little bit. And this mom is, like, coming to the edge, trying to find a way down to help it, isn't coming down. So we don't at all, like, say do this unless it's, like, necessary. But Cam and I were actually able to go over there and get this fawn and lift it up so that it could crawl up and be with its mom. But that it was kind of a crazy experience that we got to experience because Cam picked up this fawn and handed it to me up the hill a little bit, and we reunited them, and they just kind of went on their way. But this fawn weighed less than that catfish that I caught yesterday.
Oh, wow.
It was tiny.
Newborn.
Yeah. But it was crazy just hearing it, like, let out its, like, little yell and stuff. Little
bellow, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I was telling Austin, that was hard to listen to. I'd never really heard that before, and it was hard to listen to, and then it kind of got stuck in some roots, and I'm glad that we were able to help it out. And, one of the crazy things about it was the mom was just standing up there staring at us. Like, it worked out that we were down the embankment to a point where she couldn't do anything, because had she been able to do something to us, I think she would have. I mean, she blew a couple times, she was stomping, and she was ready to do something. And thankfully Austin was there, because when I grabbed it, it was too steep for me to, like, try and climb up the embankment, you know, without using my hand. So Austin sort of went up halfway and I handed it off, and then he put it far enough that it, you know, it ran off. And glad that we were able to help out. But it was funny because the group in front of us, like Austin said, they were looking at it thinking, oh, this is such a cute fawn, like, and look at the mom. And we get up there and we're like, this fawn is gonna die if we don't help it out, because there's no way it's getting back up.
Yeah, like, even us as humans would struggle getting up where this fawn was. It was a steep, like, cliff, and must have just walked too close and went down in.
That's one unique thing, I think, about hunters and outdoors people, you know, whether it's hunting or fishing, whatever, we have that eye for conservation, and not necessarily not to interrupt it, but to help it, like, and assist it like you guys did. You guys could definitely tell that it was, you know, straining, and that they weren't going to be able to reunite by themselves, you know, lack probably going across the river the other direction, and who knows what they faced on that side of the river. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I commend you guys for doing that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I wanted to share that because it was so cool. It was like I lived a lifelong dream that I didn't know was a lifelong dream of holding a baby deer. It was like, this is so cool. And, you know, it was like one of those things where now that it's happened, it's like, man, I wish I would have got a picture holding it. But that's not what it's about. And that's, you know, our main goal with touching this deer was to reunite it and save it, you know, because had the mama been able to get down there, we would have left it alone because the mom would have handled it, got it up, or, you know, done something. But just the way the river was, the way this was all cut out, it was like this fawn is going to get in this river and just get washed down and drown, because they're like it hopped in to swim away from us at one point and just leaped, and all of a sudden it was gone. And we're like, where the heck did it go? And all of a sudden it pops up on the other side of this, like, tree root. It went completely underwater. It was one of the coolest experiences I've got to experience, just interacting with nature. And I think you said it well, is like, you know, hunters, anglers, outdoorsmen, outdoorswomen have this eye for nature where, yes, we hunt it. Yes, you know, we do it to get food, but we also genuinely care about the animal. You know, I wouldn't spend hours and hours out at my family's farm putting in food plots, you know, just to kill a deer. I'm putting in food plots to help myself kill a deer, obviously, but also give them nourishment from, you know, winters past, like, the rut, the winter, all of that. So, yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. That's my, I'll get off my soapbox here, but yeah.
One thing I was thinking about too, and I don't know, maybe you know, but I know some animals are weird about, like, if you touch the baby animal, sometimes the mom will sort of, like, look the other way, like, send that animal off. I don't know if deer are that way or not. and I couldn't bring myself to look it up after the fact. I much would rather just think that they ran off together and are going to live happily ever after till this fall, hopefully. but yeah, I don't know if you know anything about that or not.
I mean, I don't. There is the old wise tale that, you know, that if you touch a baby bird or a deer or a squirrel or whatever, that the mother will abandon it. I don't believe that's always the case. You know, if you guys were there and you put it in the kayak and passed it around, took pictures, got a lot of scent on it, I could see where that may be the case, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you guys, no more than you handled it, would probably have any issue with it reuniting.
That's good news. I'll be able to sleep tonight.
Cam was up all night going, did we just do something wrong? Should have we kept that deer and just raised it ourselves? Oh, that, man. We should
have. Dakota would have had a ball.
Oh, my gosh. They would have had a blast out here running around.
Yeah. I mean, that might have prompted another visit from a conservation agent. I don't know if you guys are up for that again, but.
I've never got visited by the conservation agent, so I don't know what that's about.
Yeah.
Now, I remember, though, whenever I was growing up as a smaller kid, we had friends that actually had a small buck that they, I believe it, mom's got hit by a vehicle, and they took it in and raised it until it was like 3 or 4 years old, and it just got super aggressive during the rut, and it took off and did its thing, and we actually found out later that rifle season that ended up getting shot.
Wow.
But I remember, you know, 2 or 3 years with what they called Bucky, and whenever he'd have his little spikes and he'd come around and push on you almost like a little goat would.
Huh. That's, did they have to do anything like with conservation to like get that approved?
Who knows? That would have been 30 some odd years ago. So that's what the rules and laws were back then, I'm not for sure. I know it's not that way anymore that, yeah, you would have to have like a wildlife rehabilitation license in order to do something like that. But
we need to look into that. There's enough room in the backyard for a deer, right?
Yeah.
So you've done some volunteering with the conservation department, right? I think Austin's mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I actually volunteered out at Andy Dalding Shooting Range, was a range safety officer, helped teach firearm safety classes. A couple of our big days out there, we had day at the range, which brung special needs young adults and adults out and let them enjoy shooting both archery, shotgun, pistol, rifle. And then we had a couple of, you know, college days where college students would come out, which was always interesting when MSU would bring their students out. They had a lot of foreign exchange students that signed up to come to the range because in other countries, they're not allowed to even look at a gun. So mm-hmm. they actually got to come out and handle them and shoot them. And some of them were really good shots, you know, were just good, really right out of the gate, great shots. And it was surprising to see.
That's really cool. I remember playing soccer at Evangel, and a lot of the Brazilians were like, yo, take us to your farm. We want to shoot guns. And I would just look at them and be like, I don't trust you enough. I don't trust you enough to hand you any sort of gun. But how'd you get involved with, like, volunteering with the MDC? What drew you to that?
Was just looking for some way to reach out and help introduce people to the outdoors. It's kind of always been my passion, you know, just getting outside, whether it's hunting, fishing, just shooting, going on hikes, it doesn't matter. Just getting out and enjoying Missouri. Like I said, I've been here, born and raised here, so there's not a lot of opportunities that I haven't had that it seems like a lot of other people may not even know about. So it's just helping introduce other people to that in a safe manner, mm-hmm. you know, not just say, hey, here's a gun, go shoot a deer, you know, make sure it's not a dog or...
Or a Siberian Husky like that one lady up in, where was that? Did you hear about that?
No, I haven't.
A lady went out, I think she was wolf hunting. She got her wolf tag. She went out, I think it was Montana or Idaho, went out and smoked a Husky and then skinned it and posted a bunch of pictures with it. And, you know, the differences between wolves and Huskies are... Like, if you don't know them, it's hard to tell. But if you know them, it's pretty obvious. And owning a Husky, it was like, it was hard to look at the pictures just because I'm like, that literally looks like my dog that you've just skinned. But she, I think she actually did get, like, she went to court, was found guilty of, you know, animal cruelty or something. But she posted all these pictures claiming, like, saying it was a wolf. And I think they did some research and found out, like, someone had dumped, like, 11 husky pups. Or huskies, not even pups, just out, like, a... It was something like 30 miles from any town or anything. And she just happened to stumble across one. And she claimed it was, like, being aggressive or something to her. But it was kind of just a crazy story. But that is another... another good thing that we can talk about is make sure you know your target.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, identifying your target is one of your four basic, you know, gun safety rules. So it's there. I mean, you have to know what you're shooting at before you pull the trigger. Not only what you're shooting at, but what's behind what you're shooting at. Because if you miss or get a pass through, what else are you going to hit, you know? It seems like every year in Missouri, there's always, especially during spring turkey season, there's always accidents involving, you know, someone getting shot. Mm-hmm. Just because of mistaken identity or two people working on public land from opposite directions against the same bird and not knowing each other across the field and getting peppered.
Yeah. I know I went dove hunting and got peppered a few times. And
well, that's a given
that,
with dove.
That comes with the territory. But that was my first time. I've actually only been once opening day to public land. And, dude, that was like a war zone out there.
Yeah, it can be a circus out there on dove season opener. Yeah. Especially on some of our managed lands that, you know, grow the sunflower seeds and mm-hmm. millet for them and then brush hog it all down 2 weeks before season.
Right.
And I love it more than anything just because it's kind of like opening weekend to trout season. You know, you're building camaraderie with people that are enjoying the same activities you are. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, dove season isn't shoulder to shoulder quite yet. You know, it gets there. You can get 10 or 15 guys in the same field. It gets pretty crowded whenever you're shooting shotguns over each other's heads. Yeah. But it's always that camaraderie at the parking lot. Hey, where are you going? Where are you sitting up at? Hey, there's a bird coming your way. Hey, how'd your day go? You know?
Yeah.
So it's always, you know, you're building a little bit of camaraderie, you know, and it's a great way to meet people. You know, I've done it before and discussed other hunting, you know, hey, so what's your plans for deer season? Oh, I don't deer hunt, but I got this 150 acre farm. And it's like, you mind?
So that's how we get access to other people's farms.
So, as we're kind of getting toward the end here, one thing that Austin and I, we talked about on an episode after deer season, but one thing that made a big difference for us this year was making goals for the season. We made a lot of goals and we talked about them and we also saw a lot of the goals met. We had a lot of firsts that happened this year, whether it was our first kills with a bow or first deer out of the saddle or whatever it was. We had a lot of those things, which was awesome. I'm curious for you going into deer season. Have you thought about what goals you have? Is there a goal for this year?
Oh boy. Just one. I don't know. It seems like as a hunter, you go through phases in life. You start off as, you know, your first phase is just filling tags. That's what you want to do. You want to fill tags. You want to get as many filled as possible, you know, to prove to yourself that you know what you're doing. I've kind of been through that phase. I've been through the trophy phase, even though I haven't shot a trophy. That's been one of those things I chased for a couple of years. I've got a 150 inch on the wall. That's good enough for me. You know, for Southwest Missouri, never leaving the state. That's great. I'm in just, I don't know, I guess an enjoyment phase. You know, I just go out to enjoy. I don't know how many times I've gone out and instead of picking up my bow or rifle, I pick up my phone or my camera and take pictures. And I text them to Austin and say, hey, look at this buck that just walked by me.
See, this is why I don't have an issue with shooting deer at his spot is because he takes pictures of them. Let me just tell you. So he shot a doe and we were tracking it. A storm was rolling in or we didn't really track it. We couldn't find blood. And we just kind of did a quick look before this big storm was rolling in. He went back the next day to search for it. And we don't know where this doe went. We know he hit it, but we don't know where it disappeared to. And he tells me, he has the audacity to tell me that he walked up on a buck, a nice 8-point buck, and he didn't want to shoot it because he was tracking his other, or he was looking for his other deer. And he's like, yeah, I got to like 20 yards from it. And I was just like, what? You let a buck live? And so all that to say, this is why I'm okay with shooting deer at your place.
No, that's fine. That's why I invited you. Yeah, someone needs to. But as far as a goal to get back on track, my big goal this year is I would really like to put my daughter on her first archery deer harvest. That's one of my biggest goals this year. She's probably going to go down there to the point, and she's going to have that. This past year was kind of her first year with school and everything. We've got a spot behind the house. We have 7 acres back there. We have a resident doe that puts off fawns or twin fawns every year. So they always are behind the house. This year I've seen 4 or 5 of them back there. So she's got that location. I don't even hunt behind the house. That's hers. You know, she can go out there before school real quick, take the bow back there. And the evenings or whenever she feels comfortable to go back there, you know, I don't push her and be like, hey, you need to go hunt today. There's certain days it's like, you know, today would be a good day if you, mm-hmm. you wanted to get up early or, you know. But yeah, that's one of my biggest goals. And another goal I have this year is just to try to introduce a couple of new people to it. I know you, Austin, you took Vinny out last year. Mm-hmm. And it was his first time, you know. I don't think you guys harvested anything. But you
thanks
know,
for rubbing that one in.
Yeah, well, that it's called hunting, not killing. So that's kind of one of my goals this year is just to find someone that has expressed interest to me, or will express interest to me that I feel comfortable with, and being like, hey, let's go get one, or attempt to at least.
I think it's really cool. Like, you know, you mentioned Vinny. Vinny's a guy that I never thought would have any interest in trying to hunt. Like, I've been friends with him, you know, knew of him and knew him a little bit in college. Never from what I saw would I ever think he would want to try hunting. And, you know, I just happened to be talking about it to someone else, and he came up and he's like, dude, I would love to do that. So I was like, I can make it happen. So I think it's really cool just, like, if you're open to it, how many people would be like, yeah, I'd try it. And, you know, you can take him down. And Vinny, you know, one of the coolest things was we're driving back and he goes, you know, we saw one deer because we kicked it up. It was final minutes of shooting time. And I'm like, come on, we're walking. And we kicked one up. That was all we saw all day. And he goes, you know, we're driving back. And he's like, you know, I had a really stressful week at work. It was really busy, had to do a lot, this and that. He goes, I needed this. And I think it's something that people don't realize how just comforting it is. Not going out to kill something, but just being in nature. Like you were kind of talking about, is, you know, hiking, fishing, doing whatever it is outdoors. There's something relaxing about it.
Yeah, that's definitely totally my release. My wife will tell you that 100%. She can tell whenever I haven't had enough time outdoors. So, you know, there gets to be a little bit more tension in the household, and she'll be like, why don't you go fishing? And you never say no to that opportunity. So,
so Austin, what do you have any goals for the season? Do you have a goal? I can go ahead if you have a thing.
Go ahead.
So my big goal this year is to kill my first buck with a bow. Last year I got 2 with the bow and 2 does with the bow, and that was awesome. This year, going to try and get some antlers with it. And then I want to get my wife, Ash, on her first deer. This year, she went out a couple times. Didn't have a ton of opportunities because of school. You know, same thing like your daughter, and tough to get out. But this year, I think she's going to have a little bit more opportunities, and she wants to get that first one. So that's a big goal for me this year, too.
Yeah, I will say this. You're doing it right, probably. I did mine a little bit different, and Hannah told the story, I'm sure, on the girls' podcast. I actually made her go hunting and harvest a deer before we got married. So, you know, there's different strategies, but, you know, I knew what the things that she did and she enjoyed, and we went and did those together, and it was one of the things that I did, and I enjoyed it, and it was something I was going to continue to do for the rest of my life. So it was like, hey, if we're not melding here, then there's no point to get married because it's just going to be a fight every November.
Yeah, and, you know, Ash, I think she wants to have that first experience, but I think I'm as interested as she is to know what kind of effect that'll have on her, whether she'll be just content. Like yesterday we went floating and she caught 2 fish and she's like, okay, you know, I feel pretty good. And she fished a little bit after that, but she's like, yeah, you know, I kind of did what I wanted to do. And I'm interested to see if that's what it's like when she gets her first deer or if she gets hooked. But either way, like you said, she's going to have an appreciation for why I love it at the very least. And she already does, you know, she's already great about it and me going out and everything like that. But I'm excited to see if it has that effect on her where she's like, you know, I really see why you like doing this. I want to do this more.
Yeah. I mean, that was a great thing about my wife. She did it. You know, she successfully harvested a doe. And now she doesn't have that drive to do anymore, but she still supports me being out there and doing it. And like I said, she took my position in the meat shop. She enjoys working in the meat shop and processing deer. So, I mean, I'll go kill them and she can cut them up and grill them. I mean, so it's perfect.
I'm still trying to figure out how he got his wife to be okay with that, because Madison is not going for that. I'm like, come on, just let me go hunt. I'll just leave the deer in the garage and you can butcher them. And
well, she doesn't butcher them from hanging. Usually I'll skin them and quarter them out. But once they're go to your table cuts, you know, your stew or your roast or your back straps, whatever, she'll cut them down and finish them off, vacuum pack them, Ziploc bags, whatever, and put it in the freezer. So
that's really cool. I think that's a cool little aspect to you guys that you guys have. And you can kind of share the outdoors almost in that way. For me, goals, I've been blessed with the ability to hunt more than a lot of people with how my job is. So obviously I'll find time to get out and hunt. And selfish goal would be to put, you know, an 8-point or bigger on the ground.
Or an elk.
Well, that's, I want an elk, no matter, just any elk. That's one thing. But I think a aspect that I've got really into, kind of starting from your video when I recorded you last year, is recording it. And being able to look back on those memories of deer that I didn't even shoot, but just maybe a hunt I was on. Like, looking back, I was scrolling through my pictures and found the video of Cam shooting his first doe. And I sent it to him. I was like, or maybe, did you send that to me? I sent it to you. But it was just like, this was so cool just to get into experience that. So I'd like to be able to go out with people, you know, and even just leave the bow at home and bring the camera, you know, go out with you and your daughter and record that and have that to be able to put together a video and go, here's the memory of her first hunt. You know, I think that's something that I want to get into more. And I think that would be being able to successfully create a video of a deer harvested that's not Cam's or my deer, of, you know, someone else that we're connected with, I think would be really cool. So...
Awesome. Well, as we're getting here to the end, we do the around our campfire thing. Really, it's just about giving advice to someone who's new to hunting or bow fishing or fishing in general. Just what's a piece of advice that you'd give someone who's trying to get into it, who wants to get into it?
Just do it. I mean, there's nobody that you're going to talk to or YouTube video that you're going to watch that's going to make you get off the couch and go do it besides yourself. So go do it. Second piece of advice is find a mentor. Find somebody at work, at church, somebody that you see at Walmart that's in the sporting goods section that's picking up broadheads for deer season. Ask them questions. You know, that most anybody in the outdoors aspect, realm, hunting, fishing, will give you advice. You know, even whenever, you know, Bennett Springs, we go up trout fishing. If I have someone stand next to me and they're like, hey, what are you catching them on? I'll tell them, and they're like, I don't have anything like that. I'll open up a tackle box and give them a couple. You know, what's a couple of bucks for someone to create their own memories for the day? Mm-hmm. You know, they don't know me. I don't know them. I'll never hear a successful story besides seeing them reel in a fish after they tied on a lure I just gave them, and that's good enough for me. And that's well worth a couple of dollars I have in a fly. Third piece of advice is I don't think there's any failure in outdoors. When you're learning, failure is just learning. You learned what didn't work that time. That doesn't mean it won't work the next time, but you know it doesn't work in that certain situation, you know, especially turkey season. I mean, I think we all had lots of learning experience this week. You know, mine was, you know, I didn't set up in the correct location and give the bird long enough. You know, the bird came to me, I was impatient, got up and walked off, and as soon as I stood up, the bird's 40 yards from me over a little knoll, and had no clue it was there because it went silent on me. So there's always learning experiences. You can look at them as failure and hang your head low and go sit back on the couch, but you're not going to learn anything. You know, being out there making the mistakes is teaching you what to do for the next time.
That's advice that we have heard countless times from multiple people is, you know, just get up and do it, find a mentor, and don't be afraid to fail. Because all of us who have experience hunting, we fail all the time, like Brian just said with turkey hunting. we fail and we learn and we do better next time. But also I wanted to add something to that mentor thing for more the experienced hunter is be a mentor.
Yeah, absolutely.
That can help you learn more than having a mentor at times. You know, one thing I will say is Brian has been a mentor to us as we've, you know, tried different techniques, learned things. I've sent him texts, asking him questions, things like that. But now we're using that knowledge to pass it down to others who are coming up behind us even, or trying to learn, even to like Cam with his wife, you know, passing knowledge down that he's learned from Brian or others down to his wife that can help help her be successful. And I think ultimately, like you said, all outdoorsmen want others to be successful. Now, obviously, between us three, I'm going to kill the biggest deer.
And but... I'll let you. That means you have to drag it out.
I won't let you.
There's that competition.
I just hope you get a big 1,500-pound bull down in some big deep ravine 3 miles away from base camp. That's all I'm praying for.
I will call you and be like, Brian, I need you to fly to Denver, rent a truck, because this bull isn't going to fit in any of our vehicles. So can you do that for me? But I think that's really good advice. Brian, thank you for being on. We really appreciate it. Yep, we really appreciate you taking us to your spots, showing us how to hunt, and, you know, teaching us some of your wisdom that you've learned in your years of experience, not just in the deer woods, but, you know, bow fishing. I know when we've went, I've asked you some questions that, you know, some people may be like, how did he not know that? But it's things that I don't know. So I'm like, I'm going to ask this dumb question that, you know, might sound dumb to me, but really it's a legitimate question. And you've answered, you've taught me a lot. So I really appreciate it. I know you've taught Cam almost through me at times. So we really appreciate it.
Yeah, when you get Cam on the boat and take him out, do some bow fishing soon, just to see how he holds up. Yeah.
Let's take him to that one place where we hit the rock and I almost fell into the drop-off.
That you about fell in every time I turned the trolling motor.
Well, that's true. There are so many times, like, I'm worried about my balance because he'll turn the trolling motor and I'll go flying backwards. I'm like, what the heck just happened? And he's like, dude, really?
Yeah, and as far as long-term, I think we need to get out and explore some new locations together. You know, we have the spot down at the point. But go find other areas, you know, just get on maps. And if you guys get on something and you're like, hey, we really want to check this out, can you take us there by boat? You know, I'm always game. So yeah, just give me a call and we'll get it set up and done.
I think we should do that this summer, make it a point to check out some new areas that we haven't explored because, you know, like you kind of were joking earlier, there's no more deer down there. Once that area gets pressured enough, the deer will leave and we'll have to find them again. So,
and that's another great advantage of bow fishing at night with all the floodlights. You can really see along those public waterways on the core land where the deer are at.
You can't shoot them.
No, I want to throw
that out there.
No, but it's a great summer scouting.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great time to go out summer scouting. Just when you're not seeing fish in the water, just keep your eyes on the land and you'd be surprised how many deer you see on the shore.
Yeah, I know we saw one, I think, at least if I remember correctly. It could have been a fish. It could have been me falling in. It was something. But
yesterday with the kids out, we had a turkey, you know, 10 yards from the boat.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, well, there he is.
Found him. We were driving to fish. I looked out in this field, and there was a turkey going in and out of strut. Nice long beard. I'm like, really? This is how it goes. But that's the life of a hunter. So with that, we're going to wrap this episode up. We really appreciate you guys listening, tuning in weekly with us. If you would go on to Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you listen to our podcast, leave a rating and review. That is always awesome to us. We really appreciate that. And we just can't thank you guys enough. We have some big things coming that we're excited to announce. So with that, don't give up. All it takes is just one.